The opinions voiced on this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, or financial advisor prior to investing. Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, a member of FINRA SIPC.
There's a growing sense of frustration inside the Federal Reserve. What are they concerned about, and what does it mean for the markets and our investments? We're going to talk about that today. We start now. Hi, and welcome to What Really Matters. I am certainly not Peter McClellan. My name is Jeff Hyback. I'm the Portfolio Manager for Strategic Equity Management. Peter is out today. He's actually doing something, you know, that kind of ties into this podcast of What Really Matters. And it's really cool what he's doing, and I hope he can update us when he gets back and actually dedicate a whole podcast to it. But in the meanwhile, you're stuck with me, and I get sole control of the microphone, which I know sometimes can lead to some rambling, but I'm going to try to keep it brief and focus on the markets this week, of what they were really focusing on. And once again, it was the Federal Reserve. And they held their meeting on Wednesday, and once a quarter we see both the Fed releases their economic projections of all the members of the Fed, as well as we see a press conference from Fed Chair Janet Yellen. And it was really one of the more interesting meetings we've seen. And I think it's enlightening to see both just in the release, the economic projections, and then some of the questions asked, that we do start to see that there's some Fed members that are getting frustrated. We saw 3 dissent votes from the members, so a couple more people that start to fight Janet Yellen, and we start to see, you know, a real major divide inside the Fed. Three members wanted to see interest rates raised at this meeting, and we'll get more into that in just a little bit. We also saw the Fed lower their long-term growth rate. We saw them lower the number of rate hikes they think will happen next year. They originally thought they were going to have 3 hikes, and now it's, you know, looking at projections only 2. There's still a very high likelihood. I think 95% of the members of the Fed still think there's one more rate hike in 2016. So with only a couple more meetings to go, that still leaves markets on edge just a little bit. But as they are prone to saying, they're data dependent, which some people will say that means if the market goes down, they're not going to raise rates. But I don't know. I'm starting to see this frustration building inside the Fed. And the fact that their long-term growth rate is now down to 1.8%. It was 2% last quarter when we saw their projections. And 4 or 5 years ago, they were still expecting a long-term growth rate of 3.1%, which is actually the long-term average since World War II for the U.S. So definitely, you know, we're pushing almost half of what they were projecting not too long ago. And there's some argument going on from the academics that are members of the Fed to just the general economists out there, because there's one key thing I think people didn't understand when they pushed interest rates down close to 0, and especially as we start to see negative rates overseas, is when you get out to the edges of something, strange things can happen. It's never been done before, so the models can't duplicate that. And when you get down to 0% interest rates, we start to see the behavioral influences coming into effect, where people are saying, well, why are they at 0%? You know, what's going on there? And we see this with, you look at, you know, the amount of cash that households are holding. There's just this growing uncertainty out there. We see corporations holding mass amounts of cash. And it's almost a question of, what does the Fed see that we don't? You know, why is the economy not growing? And there's a lot of different things out there. If, you know, for those nerdy types out there like me that want to know more about why the economy is not growing, I actually did an article a few years ago called Broken Model, where I dissected the components of GDP. I looked at, you know, each individual driver of growth, what we've seen happening over the long term and then more recently. And it really, you know, as you prepare for the presidential debates, I'd encourage you to go to semtradersblog.com and click on the most popular article links and look for broken model. I actually included links to our in our chart of the week, which we're going to get to in just a minute, to that article, because it really comes down to just a couple things that can drive our economy over the long run. So when you're listening to Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton on Monday talk about their economic plans to turn the economy around, you kind of got to take a look at, are they addressing the key drivers, or in a lot of cases, are they making the growth worse over the long term, which is something we should all be concerned about. But maybe we'll talk about the debates next week if we want an hour-long podcast. So back on track here, talking about the Fed. One of the things that Janet Yellen mentioned, and it came up during the press conference. Okay, one more detour, you know, talking about the frustration. The questions at this news conference were actually really good. The whole room seems to be a little bit frustrated with this back and forth speak. A couple of reporters hinted that maybe the Fed's being too open with their communication, something we've talked about several times on this podcast. And one reason that we might be seeing people just kind of paralyzed as far as what to do with interest rates this low. They have no idea what the Fed's really thinking. And there was that frustration in there. And, you know, one reporter even asked, you know, Janet Yellen, you know, is there ever a time the Fed will raise rates? Because you keep changing the goalposts. They keep saying, well, when X happens, we're going to raise rates. And then they say, well, when X and Y happens, we're going to raise rates. And now they're saying X, Y, and Z happens, we're going to raise rates. And there's really no sense of direction happening at the Fed. But back to the question that really drew my attention was a Bloomberg reporter pointed out a little bit of discrepancy in the forecast that the Fed members released. And what he noticed was we saw a reduction in growth from 2% to 1.8% over the long run. But we also saw inflationary expectations picking up. And he said, what's with this dichotomy? And Janet Yellen, you know, in her way, you know, she was very open. And that's one thing I think people love about her. And that's what, you know, some things that other people hate about her is she's very honest. And she said the Fed is frustrated. They're why things aren't growing. And there's a big question inside the Fed that, you know, they're wondering, why is productivity not growing like it should? You look at what, you know, all the technological advances we're seeing out there, and it should be making American workers more productive, American companies more productive, and it's just not happening. And in fact, productivity growth really peaked right around the turn of the century, and we've seen it declining since then. And my article, Broken Model, at stmtradersblog.com goes into some of those things. You know, we got demographic issues, we got debt issues out the wazoo, we got some of the spending on things that are not productive going on, whether it's stock buybacks by corporations or transfer payments, you know, via what Social Security, Medicare, and some of the other welfare things out there. Those are typically considered non-productive uses of money. And that's what we're seeing happening, that the velocity of money in our system has slowed down. So everything is becoming less productive. And that actually starts to have an inflationary impact on the economy. And that's what the Fed picked up on. Nobody, I think, outside of me and a few of those reporters even paid attention to this answer, but it is a concern because if you look at things, the only way we can grow our potential economy over the long run is to grow our labor force or increase productivity. In fact, the equation for potential GDP growth is the growth of your labor force plus the growth in productivity. So if you aren't able to grow that way, if your potential GDP is declining and growth suddenly exceeds that, then all of a sudden you do have that pressure on inflation, which then causes the Federal Reserve to have to raise interest rates, which then slows the economic growth, and then you start to get into a pretty bad situation there. You don't want to have a slowing productivity environment at the same time the Fed's having to raise interest rates, and that starts to compound things. really, there's not a lot the Fed can do about it. And that's another reason the Fed is getting frustrated, is a lot of these are fiscal issues. You know, from a stimulus and an economic side, you have monetary issues. That's what the Federal Reserve can help. On the fiscal side, that's the federal government policies, Congress and the president. And going back to Ben Bernanke, the Fed has really expressed their frustration that nothing is getting done on the fiscal side. They've required the Fed to do all the heavy lifting, and they just don't have the tools to do this. So let's think about it. And what are the ways we could grow productivity? Well, there's good government spending and there's bad government spending. And I've talked about this before on the podcast, so I won't go into all the details. But I just mentioned some of the bad government spending. Now, I understand Social Security is necessary, Medicare is necessary, but even welfare is necessary for some people that just can't support themselves. However, that money is not then turned around and invested. It's spent and then it's gone, especially when you consider our trade deficit. If you give somebody a welfare check and they go to Walmart and spend it, and then Walmart buys all their products from China, we see less money floating in our system. Any money that leaves our system is unproductive. It becomes a money divisor rather than a money multiplier, which is what happened back when we actually produced the goods and services we sold at Walmart and you know, all of our stores here. So that becomes an issue. So what are the productive uses of money is physical investment in things, you know, whether it's building highways or high-speed rail between cities to help the commuters get to work or to move goods and, you know, back and forth. Maybe it's, you know, spending on technology, but, you know, high-speed internet, getting internet out there at a lower cost to all of Americans makes them more productive. It makes us able to telecommute more, and it raises the potential. You know, what about jobs? What about giving incentives for hiring people in the U.S.? You know, I don't want to necessarily penalize corporations, but we need more jobs here. We need productive jobs. You know, how can we build things here? We got to look at those policies, our trade policies and our tax policies and everything else. Training is a huge issue. You know, we look at there's jobs out there, but we have an untrained workforce. And, you know, not to bash liberal arts majors, but we only need so many of those because they're not actually going to turn around and produce things that cause us to have long-term growth and a long-term increase in productivity. And so we have to figure out a way to get more productive. There's nothing wrong with community college. There's nothing wrong with the trades, or, you know, going to trade school and getting something that you can actually produce things and turn our economy around. It's not about just free college education. It's got to be strategically placed college education. And it doesn't have to be college again. It could be trade schools and things like that. And, you know, to her credit, Hillary Clinton actually did mention something about this. And, you know, and then we look at things like immigration, and it almost seems like, you know, I don't know where the candidates stand for sure on immigration, but so many people are saying, oh, well, you know, immigrants are taking away our jobs. Well, immigrants can only take away jobs if the skills aren't there on the American side. So you look at the other side of that potential GDP equation. Remember, it's growth and productivity plus the growth in the labor force. Our labor force is shrinking, and the baby boomers are retiring more and more each day. We're seeing that growth slow down. We have to grow our labor force if we're not going to turn around and grow productivity. The best of both worlds would be to grow both. Let's figure out a way to grow our labor force and make us more productive, because then Americans in general become wealthier. We're going to see higher growth, and we're going to see that turnaround. But again, that's all fiscal policy. And that's one of the things that frustrates the Fed, is they're trying to do everything with monetary policy when that's just not the way to do it. So what does this mean for your investments? That was the other question I asked at the offset. And one of the things that I think is pretty simple to understand is the long-term growth of the market really comes down to an easy equation. You take the dividend yield, you add inflation, and then whatever the real earnings growth rate is expected to be. I've said several times that it's an economic fact that your corporate earnings cannot grow faster than the underlying economy. It's just impossible. Oh, you know, when you aggregate everything out, your long-term growth rate of corporate earnings is going to be the same as your economy. So the Fed told us this week, economy is growing at 1.8% over the long run, unless we change the productivity issues that we're facing. That's important. You add that to the Fed's assumed inflation rate of 2%. Remember, it used to be closer to 3%. And then you add the current 2% dividend yield, and you come up with 5.8% long-term growth rate of the stock market. Now, with interest rates at zero, some people might say, well, that's great. You know, 5.8% is a good return, but consider that's well below the 8 to 10% long-term average of the stock market that we used to see. And that can start to be a concern, and that's factoring in. Remember, your 5.8% that you're getting, there's risk in there. Because one of the things that this model doesn't take into account is what are the current prices of the market? Whatever metric you use, price earnings ratio, there's CAPE, price to sales, price to book value, the Buffett ratio where you take the market cap divided by GDP, they're all at levels that we've only experienced during past market bubbles. There's most likely going to be a price adjustment in there, which then would lower your 5.8%. Or if you end up over the long term getting your 5.8%, there might be a 40 to 50% drop to get there. It's assuming that profits as a percentage of GDP remain where they're at, and they're at all-time highs. But remember, if we don't become more productive, profits aren't going to be able to be up. It assumes dividend levels are going to remain the same. What's the first thing we see happening if economic growth slows down? Companies cut their dividends because they're short on cash. So really 5.8% over the long term right now is about the best you can expect. That might be good enough for some people, but you got to factor in that risk of possibly losing 40 or 50% of the money just to get 5.8%. Now, I don't want this to turn into a commercial. Those are the economic facts. The founder of Vanguard, Jack Bogle, has mentioned that's the way you evaluate it. He said that's about what you should expect for stocks right now. He has one solution, and that's just you suck it up and you plan for it and you deal with it. However, I know investors are not rational, and when they get to that 40 or 50% drop in the market, they tend to get out at the wrong time, and that's why we saw so many people over the last 15 years actually have negative returns on their investments because they got out when things were low. We don't want to see you do that. So at Strategic Equity, we have 9 different investment programs. We have some that are highly active. We call those our tactical programs that are designed to take advantage of short-term disconnects in the market. And then we have some dynamic models that are just designed to offer a different way to allocate assets. And they only are looked at once a month, but they're still active. They're trying to add value by getting into certain assets at favorable times of the economic cycle and then avoiding certain assets at other times of the economic cycle. If you're feeling a little bit uncertain about what's going on out there, if you're getting frustrated with your investments, and you're in the Twin Cities area, I'd encourage you to contact the 401k Latte company at their website, 401klatte.com. Or if you're an advisor out there or just somebody listening nationwide and you'd like to find out how you could work more with Strategic Equity, we have advisors all throughout the country. If you're an individual client listening out there, we can put you in contact with somebody in your neck of the woods. I'd encourage you to look us up. It's semtradersblog.com. There's contact information on that page as well. And I just encourage you to take a step back, look at the big picture, and invest in a conversation.
You've been listening to What Really Matters with Peter McClellan, a chartered financial consultant with the 401k Latte Company in Lakeville, Minnesota. For a no-cost consultation or second opinion of financial issues, call us at 952-882-0400. That's 952-882-0400. Or visit us online at 401klatte.com. That's 401klatte.com. We want to remind you to invest in a conversation.